Hey guys, don't forget the 2023 Street Cop Training Conference, Nashville, Tennessee, April 23rd through the 28th. You do not want to miss this. So far, guest speakers, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL that was responsible for killing Osama bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, U.S. Marine, Medal of Honor recipient, jumping on an IED to protect his platoon. Fox News host Tommy Lahren returns for 2023. Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff Mark Lamb, Sheriff David Clark, and more to come. You don't want to miss this event. We additionally have 20 of the country's top law enforcement educators giving you the best experience of your life. You will leave this event knowing more about your job and how to be proficient at the things you do, hands down, any other event that you'll ever attend. I personally guarantee it. Don't miss out. There's a room code at streetcop.com for our room block and room code at the Gaylord at Opry is where the event's taking place. Don't miss out on a discounted rate. The rate is from Sunday to Thursday. Put that in and find yourselves at a half-price room. Split it with a friend, but make sure you get there. You don't want to miss this event. It is going to be that good. If you trust me and you trust Street Cop, trust that you will leave there feeling like you've had an experience of a lifetime.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. I have with me today a New Jersey police officer who actually drove to the studio here. Started out online this morning on a Zoom. I typically do, but I just invited him in. I thought it'd be easier and probably sound better too.
Definitely.
But without any further ado, appreciate you being here today, Mike Arena.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Mike, why don't you give everybody some context of who you are and what your professional career looked like.
Okay. I am 31 years old. I'm from Manahawkin, New Jersey. I've been a police officer or law enforcement officer for a better part of 10 years. I started my career off in Point Pleasant Beach. I was a special up there. Then I transferred. Well, I took the civil service test, wound up getting picked up by state corrections, worked in state corrections for a few years, decided that, you know, that was fun throwing hands for a while, but after sitting in a prison, just wasn't.
It's a tough job, dude.
Yeah,
I did it for 2 years.
Definitely one of the tough jobs. I worked in Trenton State Prison.
Let's keep it real. It's the worst job you ever had, right?
It sucked. Yeah. Like, really, really bad, because you basically get treated like an inmate.
Yeah,
you know what
terrible.
I mean? It's like, you got to go through a metal detector to walk in. You know what I mean? You got to eat the food that the inmates make you in the ODR. You can't bring your own food in. It just sucks. So after 2 years of that, I was like, screw it. I'm going back to the road. And my buddy who works down in Prince George's County, Maryland, was working down there. He was like, hey, we're hiring. Put in the application. So sure as shit, that's what I did. Went down there. Went through another police academy. Worked there for about 3 years. Then the pay really wasn't that well. I was kind of like...
So you worked PG County, right?
Yeah, PG County. Yep, 3 years. The pay really wasn't that well. And then I saw my buddies up here, you know, working at shore towns and stuff like that, making $100,000 a year in like 7-8 years. I was like, screw that. Let's do it. Transferred up here, worked at Stockton PD, Stockton University PD, worked there for about a year.
Hmm. Did you have to go back to the academy?
That's a funny story, actually. I didn't, but I did. So when I transferred up here, my certs were going to go through and I was just going to do a waiver. Right? They didn't go through for the first 2 days. So for the first 2 days, I got smoked in the academy.
Oh, you went for 2 days?
Oh, man.
That's interesting,
dude. Brutal. Yeah, it was brutal. So I showed up day one in a suit thinking I was just going to sit in the back of the class with the waivers. Nope. Certs didn't come in. And they're like, get on your face.
Wow.
Smoked. And we all know the first 2 days of the academy.
Yeah, the worst,
right? Getting smoked for the first 2 days. So after those 2 days, certs come through. And
what was that like, dude? Did they come out and tell you?
So, yeah, so they didn't tell me shit. And then my lieutenant at the time, when I got out of the academy, like that night, she was like, I'm trying to work on it. I'm trying to get it done.
Wow.
I said, listen, I'm not doing this again. I'll go right back down to PG. Like, my stuff's still sitting on my watch commander's desk. Like, I got no problem going back down there. And so she was able to get it all figured out in like 2 days. And then the class instructor came up to me like the third day and was like, get to the front of the class. And I'm like, oh man. So I'm standing there in my recruit outfit and everything,
oh,
like
wow.
That, right? Standing at attention. And he's like, why don't you tell everybody what you did before this? And I was like, I was a police officer before this. And he's like, why didn't you tell any of us? I was like, I didn't think it was a good time as I'm getting screamed at and, you know, put on my face that, hey guys, you know, I shouldn't be really doing this. 72 hours ago, I was still working in a patrol car. And so he's like, all right, you know, just get to the back of the class. And from that point on, I was in waivers.
You didn't have to wear your Dickies anymore, right?
No.
Did exactly. You have to go run out and buy Dickies because you didn't even going to need them?
So it was all given to me from the academy, right, that day. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, because my first day I was getting smoked in a suit. Second day I was getting smoked in a suit. And then everything was given to me. And then third day I was sitting in the back of the class.
And that was it. No more PT.
No more PT. No more BS.
How many classes did you have to do the whole thing? You just have to sit there?
Yeah, basically.
So stupid.
So it was like, I don't know, maybe like 2.5 months or something like that. I went to Gloucester. I did it in Gloucester.
Yeah, I'm not knocking Gloucester in general. I'm just saying, right, it's just so dumb. The waiver process is so stupid.
It is. It's so stupid.
You're not learning anything.
Not at all. Yeah, like so absolutely. Stupid.
You could probably just take an online program. That's probably what they should do, yeah.
Right. At that point, definitely. So, you know, I worked at Stockton for about a year, and it was just not my pace. Way not my pace. Working from corrections down in PG. I know you know PG. Mm-hmm. It's a tough area, mm-hmm, right? So from going from state prison to
PG County, like PG, which is pretty much state prison without the bars.
Exactly.
Right.
And then going to Stockton University.
Not all PG, but...
Not all PG. You're right. Right. And then going to Stockton University where it's like a child care at that point. Like you got to be so community policing and, you know, just a way different atmosphere. I was like, I can't do this anymore. So then I transferred from Stockton to Ventnor City because it was a civil service. So I was able to just do a lateral transfer straight over. And then I spent the rest of my career in Ventnor.
Was the academy for Prince George's County hard?
It was tough. It was definitely tough because it was like 8 months. Mm. It was the longest one that I went through. It definitely had its challenges. They do a really good thing, which I think a lot of academies should take up. They do this thing called BST. It's basic street tactics, right? So you need to go through, I think it's like 20 scenarios or something like that. And you need to hit every agenda on this scenario or you do not pass it. And if you do not pass it, then that's it. You're shit canned. You're out the door. Right. And they put you in kind of real life scenarios. They'll do like, you know, a car stop or, you know, an active shooter or, you know, like a ped stop. And, you know, the guy's got drugs on him. So you got to go through the whole entire gamut. You got to be able to stop him the right way, talk to him the right way. Because anytime you do something different, the instructors, that's how they dictate if they're going to go one way or another. If you miss something, they'll just, you know, kank your ass and you'll go like a separate way and you'll never find the drugs in the guy's sock or whatever the case would be. So you need to hit every point to make it through there. It's not like how some police academies are, you know, you have your stupid car stops, you know, you walk up to the car, it's like a 1 day thing and they tell you how to look at licenses and shit like that. And then you're done.
Dude, I remember the third academy I went to, they did vehicle search. I never forget, it was on the calendar. It said vehicle searches. They brought one of our drill instructors had take home on Mark Crown Vicks.
Right, right.
And they brought that around. I'll never forget. Like, they walked us out. They're like, all right, go ahead, search the car. And like, yeah, like, pull the, like, visors down. Like, right. You see that? Like
systematic,
there.
You know?
No, it was even systematic. It was like, and I never forget, like, being out there. And, you know, of course, I had a problem with everything. And the drill instructor, she was like, what is it, Benino? What is the problem? Like, I don't know. You guys going to pop the hood of the car? Or that's not part of it. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, you pop the hood too. I'm like, I don't know. I just thought that would be something we would learn when right. You search a car to search the entire car, not miss 30% of it. Gotcha. That's just me.
Now, yeah. were you on the job before?
Yeah, dude. I had to go to 3 academies.
Oh, shit. Where at?
Well, I started in corrections. Then right. I went to
Jersey Flessy. Corrections?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hot shit.
And then not state, county. Okay. So my academy here was 17 and a half weeks.
Right, right, right.
That was when corrections academies are a lot longer.
Yeah.
Then I went to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. No drill instruction, but, you know, it was easy in some sense, but there was a lot of challenges in another sense. So it wasn't, although there wasn't drill instruction, they beat our butts off in PT. Right. It was tough.
Was that the Fletsy in Maryland?
No, Fletsy in Glencoe, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It was 2004. And then I came back 20 months later after I took that job. And had to go back to the academy again. And I asked for a waiver. I actually brought all the paperwork in. I'm like, I don't have to go. I don't know why you guys are sending me.
Wow.
And, you know, it was like 5 days before the academy was starting. I went to one of the worst ones here. It was a terrible academy. I don't want to even say it publicly.
Gotcha.
but it was a well-known like Hanoi Hilton of academies. It was terrible.
Right.
And I'll never forget the captain. I'm like, hey, man, I already called PTC. Mm-hmm. They said I'm waiverable.
Right.
Just have the chief sign off on it.
Exactly.
Good to go. I'm like, I don't have to go to the academy. I came back a couple days later and he's like, you're going. I'm like, why?
Wow.
He's like, well, the chief wants the training records here. And I'm like, dude, this is so stupid.
That's the.
And you know what's crazy? Kid that I got hired with was a class 2 one summer, did a 3 day a week academy at night, a couple hours a night.
Yep.
And got waived. He actually did one summer as a class 2. I had 4.5 years on the job, and he got waived and was on the road immediately.
Wow.
And I had to go back to the academy. I mean, dude, I've been like 20 pursuits. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Like, you have experience more than this special ops in the summer.
And bro, where he worked was like,
right.
A joke.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, but it's like one of those places where you're just there's nothing. They might hire 5 to 7 specials for the summer.
And all they do is just either do like parking enforcement or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I'm sure he did something, but in three months, what could possibly go on? All right, keep going.
So then that's, and once I left Stockton, I transferred to Ventnor, and that's where I ended up finishing out my career there and had a blast there. It was a great time. Great time.
How did you finish your career? This is the interesting part. So what brings you here today?
So August 6, 2020, I wound up getting into a officer-involved shooting and unfortunately having to discharge my weapon and taking someone's life. And that's how I wound up ending my career as a law enforcement officer. Not the way that I wanted to end it, but at that point, you know, that's just how the cards fell. I really couldn't do anything else about it.
When you say ended your career, you're not saying in the sense that like you went to prison.
No, definitely not ended, not in like that context. But I mean, you know, being a cop, like when this is like your identity, you know what I mean? And when that kind of gets either taken from you or you decide that you're walking away from it, you know, I started when I was 19 years old. You know, I'm 31 now. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like one trick ponies, you know, like you told me.
Let's pause there for a second. That's what you tell yourself.
Right.
Right. Cops tell themselves all the time, you know, the, what am I supposed to do, bro? I don't have a college degree.
It's true.
It's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
And that's the story we hang our hats on because I guess there's like this mentality of finding an excuse for why you can't do more or do something else. Listen, I've heard it. I actually don't even give advice anymore unless I really know somebody's willing to listen and believe it.
It took me a while to understand it.
Yeah.
Once you know, it was done and over with that I was leaving, you know, from what the doctors were saying and from what, you know, I was like, you know, this is just right for me to do. It took me a while to kind of wrap my head around like, okay, I have another life to live here. Like, this isn't just me. In the beginning, that's what I was thinking, but had to just literally just suck it the fuck up and be like, I'm 31 years old. I can't make this all about, you know, policing anymore. Like, I got to do something else with my life.
Have you picked what you're going to do yet? And I'll give you some advice on that too.
Not 100%. I'm just literally trying anything and everything, just trying to see what sticks, trying to use the assets that I've, you know, or the skill sets that I've created over 10 years, you know, and try to use that to my benefit. But as of right now, it's just kind of throwing darts at a wall and seeing what sticks for the time being.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. People don't think about this, but it's actually not that hard to kind of unpack and try to find your way. Even when somebody calls me and says, hey, I'm not in law enforcement anymore, whether it's a good reason or a bad reason, I'll say to them, like, if I was you and I didn't know where to go first, I would just go on like Indeed.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Just goof around.
Yep.
And I always tell people in life, your next step doesn't have to be your final step. It's like when you're 17, people are like, what are you going to do for a career? How the fuck do you know what you're going to do when you're 17? Outside of probably every cop knew what they were going to be a cop when they were 17.
Right.
But outside of that, how do you know, right? Like, I mean, my story is an interesting one. I've literally worn many, many hats. I think I'll continue to wear many, many hats as I go on and progress. I couldn't predict what my story is going to be, and nobody really can predict what their story is going to be. And you know, just that footstep forward, trying to find your way. So you go get a job, it pays you 60, right? You go do that. You don't like it, or another opportunity comes along. Maybe you shift, maybe take a pay decrease to go to something you like more. Maybe take a pay increase, go find something else. Maybe you find a job you didn't know existed. Just don't forget, nobody's bringing the jobs to you.
Correct.
You're not somebody.
100%.
Yeah. So even another website that's interesting is usajobs.gov. A lot of cops are comfortable with the government paying their salary. You know, if you go on usajobs.gov, there are civilian investigator jobs mm-hmm. that probably pay $75,000 to $80,000
yeah.
a year.
Yeah.
And with overtime, and there's a lot of stuff involved. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. And one thing I can tell you is just don't be afraid to take leaps of faith mm-hmm. and find your way, man. And sometimes you might want to just even do things on your own. Right. It depends.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I go on Indeed. I look at stuff. I actually just did a ride along with a private investigator company out of Philly. You know, I'm sitting in a van, just fraud investigation.
That's boring.
Right. Exactly. That stuff's tough. I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, let me just see how this kind of goes.
At 31, that's tough because if you're somebody who likes excitement, being a private eye is tough. Dude.
Yeah, it was.
It's not exciting.
Not for me. Exactly. So, yeah.
Sitting watching somebody for 5-6 hours.
Horrible.
Waiting for them to come out of their house.
Exactly.
You know, then you're going to get harassed by the police because people are going to call and say that you're.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And we've been on the other side of that. You know, I've pulled up to these. Oh, well, there's a sketchy van sitting outside. You go up, you talk to the guy. He's a PI. He's waiting for some, whatever, workman's comp case or whatever the bullshit
right.
is. Right. So that's what I did, literally 4 or 5 days ago. And I was just I called the guy back. I said, listen, this isn't for me. I'm sorry. I can't do this. And now it's just on to the next, the next thing. I'm just trying anything.
Maybe you want to try to get out of the whole realm of something with a law enforcement feel to it.
Yeah, it's true. That's definitely, one of the other avenues that I'm looking for. And like you said, just get on Indeed and just look for anything. Just look at these job descriptions, see if you like something.
What do you love?
I don't know.
What do you like?
I liked being a cop. I liked the tactical side of being an officer. You know what I mean? That was one of my niches. Everybody has their kind of niche in law enforcement or anything like that. Like tactical side was enjoyable to me. Weapons were enjoyable to me, being a range instructor, firearms, everything like that. All that stuff was extremely enjoyable to me. SWAT team was extremely enjoyable. And just trying to maybe kind of morph that into now a civilian capacity. Or even instructing, Instructing's been one of those things that I've always enjoyed and stuff like that. I've always liked teaching people,
Mike, we already have a firearms instructor here.
Oh, no, I'm not going
I'm
down
just saying,
that road.
I'm just letting you know, I want to be very clear about that right now.
Nope, not going
Rich
down
Bruno, don't worry, I got your back, buddy. I ain't letting you get fucking sold out here by Mike Arena. You're still my hero.
Yeah, so that's basically where, where I'm landed at right now. As of today, that's kind of where I'm landed. So.
Yeah, dude, listen, just keep your eyes peeled, be proactive. And
right, of course.
Something really good will come across your desk.
Definitely.
So go back to the incident. Tell me about what happened in the incident.
Yeah, so it was a Thursday. I know it's kind of cliche, but it was extremely just slow day. We had a storm roll through in the morning and... Obviously, from working, it's nothing really goes on when it's raining out, right? So
besides car crashes.
Right, exactly. Besides the stupid shit that you don't want to sit outside in direct traffic for.
Oh, that's the worst, dude.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Right. So storm rolls through in the beginning of the day, nothing's really going on. And then later on in the day, we get a call for a stolen motor vehicle. Our town has 3 wards, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And motor vehicle theft, whatever. Comes out in the 3rd ward. It's one of my other partners. So I go over there to see if I can help him out, just whatever the case may be. As we're sitting in the Acme parking lot right there, dispatch is like, hey, the guy's not here. He's going to come back later on in the day if he wants to or whatever. So I go, whatever, it's the BS. I'll go back to my own ward. So as I'm coming out of the Acme parking lot right there, I see this guy. He's driving this BMW. He starts pointing at me and pointing back. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck this means. So I make the left, I park at the light, I pull alongside him. I'm like, yo, man, what's up? What's going on? And he's like, there's a postal truck driver in the middle of the road with a guy running around it. And I'm like, all right, I'll go see what's going on at this point. So flip a bitch, turn around, throw the lights on. And as I'm driving up to it, I see it. The call comes over dispatch. She tells us hey, there's a postal truck driver. This guy's trying to either try to steal the van or he's bleeding. It's unclear what's going on, but the call is in Atlantic City. So where Ventnor and Atlantic City meet, you have Wellington Avenue and West End, right? And, that's obviously we all know Atlantic City is not the best area, right? So a lot of the bullshit kind of trickles over into Ventnor. So, but the call is in Atlantic City. So I notified dispatch that yes, the call is going to be in Atlantic City and I'll be out with it. So jump out of the car, start walking up to the postal truck driver, and I see this male walking alongside the road in the marsh. So I keep my eyes on him, but I, you know, I have my ear to the postal truck driver. He tells me, this guy's tried to jump in my van. He's either trying to get hit by cars, but he's bleeding really bad from the neck. He might have got stabbed with something. I said, okay, not a problem. So he's about 15 yards at that point. I wind up walking up to him like, hey, man, what's going on? You know, how can I help you? Why don't you take a seat for me? And at that point, he turns, and I can see that he has a laceration from the bottom of his earlobe probably to the front of his jugular right here. Automatically notify dispatch, like, listen, just start me an ambo here because he's bleeding from the neck. So I'm trying to get him to sit down, but he keeps walking alongside of the marsh, so I keep walking back with him. And he turns, and as he turns, I can see there's like a broken bottle in his left hand at that time. You know those massive Jack Daniel bottles that you can get? They're almost like gag gifts, but they're huge, right? That's what the top of it was. He broke the bottle, and the top of it was that thick, sharded metal. Like, it's probably maybe about maybe 6 inches. Mm-hmm. And so I see that, call it over the radio, notify it, immediately start giving him commands. You know, just drop the bottle, dude, drop the bottle, drop the bottle. Starts telling me to go fuck myself, no, shoot me, the whole gamut, right? So as he keeps walking down the road, I create distance with him, right? And then one of my other class twos comes up, and knowing the class two role, they're not covered, you know, under the PD or anything like that. They're just, you know, they're not under the like PBA or anything like that. I don't want this dude to get, God forbid something pops off, this kid get jammed up. We actually winded up having that a couple of years prior with one of our other class twos. So I immediately tell him, just stop that traffic. For two reasons. One, I don't need you getting involved in this. And two, I'm not trying to get picked off by one of these fucking retards driving on their cell phones. And as I'm trying to focus on him and not get, you know, crushed by some idiot driving a car. So I have him block the traffic, still giving him commands to be able to drop the bottle. At that point, my other partner, Jimmy, comes from behind me. And he does the same thing. We're trying to just get him to be able to drop the bottle. That goes on for maybe like 4 or 5 minutes. Just us, just literally just walking in basically a circle. I don't know if you watched the video or not, but complete silhouette of this. So we're doing that dance for a little bit. And then at that point, you know, I tell Jimmy, you know, we need to push him towards the marsh, right? We got to use the bay as a backstop. If we do need to take this shot, we got to use the bay as a back. There's a bay on both ends here, right? And Wellington Ave is a two-lane highway. So we don't want to take this shot going vertical at that point or horizontal at that point because, you know, if you miss a shot, the round's going to keep going. So let's use the bay as a backstop here. So I tell him that. We wind up moving him back towards the bay. And at that point, Atlantic City comes on scene. It's like 7 or 8 minutes, right? They finally come on scene. They have a taser. I'm like, all right, great. We can end this shit right now. We don't have to worry about anything. Just come up, tase his ass, not a problem.
Yeah, so unbeknownst to a lot of people, many law enforcement officers in New Jersey do not have tasers.
We did not. Nope, we did not.
Even now, they're still trickling out. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has them.
Right.
And the reason is our attorney general at that time considered a taser to be lethal force. Correct. And of course, in typical New Jersey fashion, what that person did, it's not the same attorney general now, but that person did at that time essentially cost people their lives.
Yeah.
Bad liberal decision making, just stupidity.
Correct.
And if they would have given us tasers, boy, we could have ended a lot of things a lot more amicably.
100%.
And eventually it finally changed. And now tasers are used in accordance with the use of force scale like everybody else has.
Right. And that's, see, we didn't carry tasers at the time. Sure shit, my department carries tasers now, or my old department carries tasers now. Atlantic City, not every single one of their officers had it.
You know? You just got lucky this guy had a taser.
So it gets interesting out of this, right? So when he comes up with the taser, you know, me and my partner's like, all right, good, but he's got to hurry up with this fucking taser. Like, we got to do this shit. This guy's ready to die. Like, suicide by cop is in this dude's mind. We tried giving him water. You know, he was like, listen, you know, I just want water. My partner Jimmy's like, all right, runs back to the truck. He's like, listen, I'll give you a water bottle, but you need to drop the glass bottle and we'll give you water. He's like, no, fuck that. So we finally talk him down to dropping the bottle and picking up the water bottle. He throws him the water bottle. He picks it up. Sure shit. Drinks it. Puts it down. Picks up the bottle again. And he's like, I want to get shot. Like, this is happening. We're doing this.
You guys have body-worn camera?
Yes. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So, and I keep telling him, I don't want to do this, dude. Like, don't, this is not what we're here to do. He's like, no, you guys are police. This is your job. No, it's not. Like, we're not here to kill you, man. We're not here to shoot you. We want to be able to help you. My sergeant at the time was calling for a negotiator, was calling for anybody to be able to talk this dude off this ledge that he was on. And so long story short, you know, as we're still talking to him, there's a car to my right, and my partner Rob is behind me. So I tell him, I'm like, hey, go to the other side of this truck, because we don't want him moving towards the civilian population that we have the roads blocked off of. So I turn around, I get the guy out of the truck that's sitting there watching this entire debacle go down, right? You got four cops, guns drawn to one guy circling in the street. He's probably like, what the fuck is going on here? So I open up the car door. I'm like, dude, just get out of the truck. Stay behind those cars right there. So we all form like basically like a line. Like, we're not going to go past this line at all. The AC officer comes up and he goes to deploy the taser, which I didn't know that the taser malfunctioned. I didn't know that there was an issue with the taser until later on. Goes to deploy the taser. You know, the subject, he comes down. His name's Amir Johnson. He looks at it and he goes, I can eat a taser. I can fucking eat a taser. Starts running back into the marsh. And at that point, it was game on for him. He was like, fuck it. We're going. I'm doing this now. He puts out this blood-curdling scream and starts sprinting at me and my partner, Rob, who were side by side with each other. So he starts sprinting at us. And as I'm looking down the road, I'm thinking same thing, backstop beyond. Where am I looking at? Who's around me? How am I going to take this shot? And I see the other AC officers behind him. So I start screaming, get out of that view, get out of that view. And you could see them on the video. They start kind of like trickling across, because you're liable for every round that comes out of that gun. The last thing I want to do is hit somebody.
Shoot another cop.
Right.
I mean, lesson learned there, right?
Right, exactly.
If you're on a scene like this, think about where the backstop's going to be. You're going to be saying, like, don't let it be chaotic.
Exactly. Right. And that's exactly what I'm screaming to them. I'm like, get out of that view, get out of that view. So he starts running towards us. And as he's running towards us, we pass the red truck that I told the guy to get out of. And then as we're backpedaling, one of the civilians, we got to their car, this gentleman opens up the passenger door and starts getting out of the passenger door. So now you have him running towards us with a broken bottle, and now this passenger getting out of this car. And I think just instinctively planted my foot and fired, you know, just pressed off the first round. My partner was like simultaneously right behind me. We press off rounds. He drops, you know, and that is the worst possible spot where I wanted to take that shot. My entire intention was to use the bay, not any problems. And then we wind up taking a shot on the shoulder of a road with a civilian opening up a car door. So now we go from about 6.5 feet to about 3.5 feet that we need to make sure that our rounds count and are on target. Because if they're not, now we have a civilian possibly hit. Or if we miss, those rounds will continually traveling down the road. So he drops. He still has the bottle in his hand. You know, then he obviously starts bleeding out, and all of his motor skills just kind of go out the window. So opens up his hand. We turn him over. We cuff him. And then the body camera cuts out, right? That's where it ends.
Why does the body camera cut out there?
Well, that's how the AG's office cut it. Like, okay. That's like the news, whatever. That's the public's view of it.
Okay.
So what you don't see after is us just working on him, just trying to get it. We're like sitting him up. We're trying to pour water in his mouth. You knew right then and there it wasn't going to be a good scene. All rounds hit target. Six rounds came out. They're all hollow points from within 3 yards. You know, use your head about what, you know, how the impact zone and how the, you know, exit wounds are going to be. So we're working on them, trying to keep them as stable as we can until the ambulance gets there. The ambo gets there. They're on the other side of the scene where we have all the cars blocked off. They like can't get through. So we made the executive decision between all my partners on scene. We picked him up and ran him about 40 yards to the stretcher. So once we get him on the stretcher, the medic's like, what happened? And my first reaction is like, what are you fucking kidding me? Like, how the hell? She's like, I can't work. And I'm like, this, he's cuffed from the back. Turn him over. We uncuff him. Come to find out that not only did he slit his neck, he slit both of his wrists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I mean, straight filleted right down the thing. When we cuffed him, the cuff went into his skin.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So now we're trying to uncuff him, right? But all his blood and his flesh is like coagulated inside of the actual cuff key itself.
Wow.
So we're like, I'm holding it and I'm trying to like jiggle the whole cuff key to get it out. And I see that it's under his skin. So now I got to peel it and peel it back to get the cuff out. We finally uncuff him. He goes off in the ambo. We start walking back. And I remember the first thing I looked at on the ground where he was, there was a spent round that came out, totally mushroomed, laying on the ground. And I'm like, wow, that there must have been like a volleyball size exit wound coming out of him for the round to literally fall out of his back cavity. And at that point, you know, Sergeant came over. He's like, take your body cams off. We put them on the like hood of the car. And a wave of emotions are just like, what the fuck just happened? You know, how did we get to this point? How am I now in this point? You see it on TV, you see it. Remember, this is 3 months after George Floyd. So policing is not in a good point at this time. I think George Floyd was killed in end of May. This is in August. So we're like 3 months. Everybody hates us still. And that's trickling into my head. Like, fuck, what the fuck just happened? This subject is black. I'm white. All three of us are white that fired our weapons. Fuck. How is this going to go down? And we get to the, you know, we jump in the ambulance. We go to the hospital. And as I'm sitting in the hospital, I remember being like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, how am I going to do this? What the fuck am I supposed to do now? And I didn't take my vest off. I couldn't take my vest off. Like one of the nurses was like, you know, it's okay. You can just like take your vest off. I'm covered in blood, literally up to my wrist and elbows in blood. And she's like, take your vest off so we can do like some, you know, whatever monitor things you put to put on a heart, the EKG and shit like that. And I was like, no, I'm not taking anything off. I don't know what's happening. I'm scared shitless at this point. And one of my partners who just made it to the detective bureau comes downstairs and I turned to him and I was like, Kev, is he dead? And he's like, I don't know. And I saw it in his face and I was like, dude, just fucking tell me if he's dead or not. And he's like, yeah, he's 10-7. And I was like, fuck. And I took my vest off. I threw it against the wall because that's just not my intention. You know what I mean? My intention was not to do this. And at that point, doctor comes in and my lawyer comes in. And he's like, do you have any medication? Like, did you take any medication? Has anybody tried to talk to you? And my partner's like, yeah, they're outside trying to talk to him. State police shooter response team. They want to talk to him. He's like, no, he's medicated, you know? And that was that. And then, you know, I went back to the PD after a couple hours of sitting in the hospital and got evaluated, checked out, good to go. Came back to the PD. They took the gun, pictures, all this other stuff. And I went home. So that was the last time I put on a uniform. Mm. Yeah.
So we'll go back a little bit.
Yeah.
Looking back on it now, what are some of the big lessons learned from that experience that you'd like to share with other people? And we'll start with that because then we'll go into what happened, the aftermath of it.
The biggest lessons that I learned from that is that, you know, you can be the biggest, baddest, toughest guy that you think that you are, but there is a breaking point in every person's head that when you go through something, whatever it is, everybody has a breaking point. And at that point, which is, it's easy for me to say now, 2 years after the fact, that was my breaking point. Mm. Because I didn't get in this job to start, you know, lacing people up. I didn't get in this job to say, fuck it. I don't give a shit if I got to put somebody down. It is what it is. This is what I do. This is what I signed up for. No, No one signs up for doing this shit. No one signs up to get shot at. No one signs up to kill people. Sign up because we love doing this. We love helping people. I know it's cliche enough, but every time we go into a job interview, why do you want to be a cop? Oh, I want to help people. Yeah, that's, you know, what everybody says, but underlying, that's kind of what we're doing here. So that's one of the biggest lessons I took from it, is that there is a breaking point and everybody has it.
Tactically, mm-hmm. What kind of lessons do you think you learned?
Tactically, that the police departments need to be able to allow their guys, give them every single tool, regardless of budget or criticism from the public or whatever the case may be, to perform their job to the best of the abilities. If we had tasers that day, I would not be sitting here talking to you, right? The taser that the Atlantic City guy had, which I found out after the fact, once the body cameras were released, is that he goes to deploy that taser and it's dead.
Oh, it wasn't charged.
Never charged. On like the back of the like tasers, how it gives you like the 00 yeah, or whatever the case may be, nothing. And you see it, he looks at it and he goes, you got to be kidding me. Like, I can't believe this. Like, I can't believe this thing's malfunctioning. And I know tasers because we had them when we were in Maryland. Like, no, bullshit. I just know it's not fucking charged.
They just didn't charge it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now that turns into an accountability issue and everything like that. Again, I know he was wet running in through the marsh. I get it. But at that point, if that taser would have been deployed, maybe something turns different. Maybe he runs a different direction. Maybe he stumbles and he falls and we can get on. There's a million different scenarios that could have happened if that taser is deployed. And I didn't know this until the body camera footage came out. But tactically, in the tactic side of this, is that police departments, not just in Jersey, throughout this country, need to get off their asses and stop worrying about budgets, how the public perceives them, how they're trying to be the next mayor and there's political bullshit around it. No, fuck that. Give your guys the tools to be able to perform the job the best of their ability. I know people are like, we don't want outer carriers because they're, you know, whatever, they're too tactical or whatever the case may be, or we don't want to carry tasers because they're too expensive. Fuck that. I'm here to tell you that is what happens. This is what happens. Your guys find their breaking point when you're sitting there worrying about budget and worrying about your political status or if you become mayor next. Jerk yourself off at that point.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of things are you dealing with after the shooting?
That's pretty murky water. That's some pretty muddy stuff. After the shooting, it was tough because in my mind, I was like, fuck this, I'll handle it myself. This is what I'll do. You know what I mean? And I can do this. I can take care of this. You know, I was on a SWAT team for, you know, 2 years. I've been 10 years in this career. I've seen and done a lot of other crazy shit in my career. You know, why is this going to be any fucking different? Just pull your bootstraps. Let's fucking go. Suck it the fuck up. And I did that for months and months. And I was completely shut down to everybody. All my friends, my family, my ex-girlfriend at the time was just like, you're just different. Like something's up with you. You don't talk. You don't want to talk. You don't want to go anywhere. You just want to sit inside of the house. You're jumping at everything. Like there was a guy putting a roof on next to me and shit like that. So I was the nail gun's going off. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Super hyper vigilant. And then after, you know, really sitting down and talking to people, they're like, you definitely have PTSD from this stuff. And I wasn't sleeping and just complete insomnia, going to the gym at crazy ass hours, working on a car at 3 o'clock in the morning for absolutely no reason, changing oil at 3 o'clock in the morning. Who the fuck does that? Who wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning and says, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to go ahead in the garage. I'm going to go change the oil in the car. That's the stupid shit that was going through my fucking head, along with everything else in the world. Looking at the news, seeing how, you know, waiting for the next bullshit George Floyd or some crap to fucking go on to throw law enforcement even further in the gutter than it already is. And then at that point, I just broke down. I couldn't do it on my own anymore. And I had to start asking for help.
What was the treatment like from the investigators? Was it pretty easy? Were they amicable? Did they understand that the body-worn camera and like realized You tell me.
It was the night of the shooting got to me a little bit, because as I go there, you know, they give me another gun and everything like that. But then they also hand you your preliminary charges, mm-hmm. right? It's a death. This is an investigation. It's a homicide investigation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, people don't understand that. They're like, I can't believe they fucking did that. But at the end of the day, you got to look at it. That is, it is a homicide investigation, and they need to do this as such. So they tell you, just letting you know, there is going to be murder and manslaughter charges introduced to this. Not what I wanted to hear 6 hours after putting somebody down. So that kind of weighed into my head. That was the first and last I saw of the state police shooting response team. The investigations that I had to go to, the whatever trooper barracks it was down in Galloway, and had to go through the whole interview process with them. Just whatever my statement was. And then they let me review the body cam footage. Those guys did a great job. You know, he came in, he was very, very, you know, nice about it and everything like that. Had no issues with him. Went through the whole thing. My lawyer was sitting next to me. And then I was able to view the body cam footage after. And I was pretty shocked that I was able to remember so much, because a lot of people have like auditory blockage, or they have like that tunnel vision issue when you go through something. From what my statement was and from what I remember to what the body camera shows, was pretty spot on. I remember one of my best friends came to my house after, and I actually wound up calling him inside of the hospital, because this is now all hitting the news. And I'm from Ocean County, so it's like people around the area know, you know, what's going on. It starts hitting the news. And I wound up calling my ex-girlfriend at the time, and I let her know. I'm like, listen, you're going to see this on the news. I'm okay. My guys are okay. Like, I'm not going to be home for a while. So she's like, what the fuck does that mean? And I just click. I can't talk about this. So she keeps calling me. And this is when I'm in like hospital. My buddy calls me, and he's a cop up in Raritan Borough. He just made sergeant up there. Calls me. He's like, what's up? And I said, read between the lines. I'm okay. My guys are okay. But I'm not going to be home for a while. And he's like, got it. Click. I was able to tell him 7 words, and he knew it immediately. Calls my ex-girlfriend at the time, my family. Listen, Mike's been involved in a shooting. I don't know the whole aspect of it, but I know he's okay. And that was that. That's how everything kind of transpired through that night. But like, like the whole investigator thing, that was the really only times that I saw him. Besides that night and my statement.
When did you get cleared officially?
Oof. Almost 2 years after.
Wow. Why so long? COVID?
Both. I think both COVID and the fact that this state is royally fucked in their way of investigating officer-involved shootings. It used to be that it would go to the prosecutor's office, major crimes would take it 6 months, be done and over with. But since the state of New Jersey and their liberal fuckitude that they do, excuse my language on that, but they have to have their finger in fucking absolutely everything, that now every officer involved shooting needs to go to a grand jury. This state's huge. You have 35,000 law enforcement officers in this state, maybe even more. I don't know. And everything needs to go to grand jury. What the fuck you think's going to happen? You're going to backlog the goddamn system. So then what? Now you got guys like me and my partner and everything like that are sitting on the fucking back burner waiting for this shit to go to fucking grand jury. And then something like COVID hits, right? And it's a state office, right? So they're not having the grand juries, you know, they're like worried about COVID like crazy. So we're not having it. And then you just have the whole way the world was at that point. Like I said, it was 3 months after George Floyd, you know, so they're like, well, wait a minute. We got to wait for this to kind of die down a little bit. We got to pull a whole full scale investigation to this. So yeah, 2 years, almost 2 years to the month.
What was it like when you got that call?
Oof. It was, I slept almost 16 hours that next day. It was unbelievable. It was one of the things that I was just extremely relieved about. almost surreal. I'll be honest with you. I was kind of like, fuck, like, it was like I was attached to policing just that little bit, right? And then once it was, all right, listen, you're cleared, you're good to go. Enjoy the rest of your life, whatever you decide to do with it. I'm just like, wow, now it's over. Now this is like a really, because it went on for so fucking long, right? And then throughout 2 years, I'm just on pins and needles waiting for the next George Floyd to happen, waiting for the next, this is just in my head, thinking like, fuck, like I hope nothing crazy goes on because it goes to grand jury, you know? And I know it's all about how like the state, you know, puts it up and everything like that. But it's still, you still got whatever it is, 20 people, 18 people, you know, watching this and making their determination on it, who've never done the job before, who've never been in a situation like this. And to be honest, who go home and watch Fox and CNN every fucking night anyway. So waiting for the next quote unquote George Floyd shit to happen, it's the last thing you want for 2 years, just hoping and praying that everything goes good.
And ultimately, after all this, when did you decide to apply to try to get a pension?
Oh, just to retire, you mean?
Yeah, to retire.
Yeah. So it was probably a good year, maybe a little over a year into it. And I just wasn't dealing with everything the right way because I just pushed it off. You know what I mean? For months, for a good, like probably 8 months, I was like, fuck this. I'm going to do everything myself. I would go to my doctor's appointments and I would just sit there. We would sit there and just fucking look at each other. And that's it. And I'd be like, I'm not talking about this. I don't want to talk about it. I'll deal with it myself. Not a problem. And probably about a little over a year after speaking with my doctors and really kind of seeing how this affected me, I started really doing a deep dive into myself that if I went back, could I make those same calls I made that day? Could I do this again? And then like the whole moral injury starts coming into play. Like, can I do this again? Do I want to do this again? And the answer was no. You know, for me, the answer turned into being no, because I'd never want to put myself or my partners in harm's way if I overanalyze something or underanalyze something. I don't want to overreact or underreact. And that day, going through everything, telling my partners to stop vehicles, you know, in both ways, knowing my backstop and beyond, knowing everything I'm doing, like even with this guy charging at me, knowing that there's officers behind me in a view that I need to worry about 20 yards, 30 yards away behind him. All things that I've learned throughout my career and I've taken from every person I've ever worked with. If I can't make those same calls again, I'm a liability to myself and other people. And at that point, I took it upon myself to, you know, go down to one of my PBA meetings. And I told my guys, I said, in person, I said, I don't want you to hear it from a text message. I don't want you to hear it from a phone call or word of mouth. Exactly what I just said. If I can't make those same calls again and I'm a liability, I'm taking myself off the team.
What's one last thing you want to give to everybody about your situation? Maybe they can find value in some of this stuff. So one last piece of advice.
Yeah. Piece of advice I would definitely give is that, you know, kind of how I started off with all this is that everybody has their breaking point. You know what I mean? And you need to, once you identify it and you can see it, don't push yourself through something. You know what I mean? Like I was never the guy to be like, oh shit, I have PTSD from this. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't believe in it, to be honest. I didn't believe in any of that bullshit beforehand. Which it's not now bullshit now, but it's true, is that you go through something and you need to ask for help. You gotta ask for it. Don't think because you're a cop that you're like, you know what? This is my department's going to look bad on me. Because this is a black eye in law enforcement, right? If you go back after a shooting or after an involved incident, anything it is, and you turn around and tell your superiors, guys, listen, something's in my head's not right with this. I need to take some time off to figure this out. You're blackballed, right? Like you're blackballed and that's it. Your administration looks at you as like a liability. Your guys around you are like, oh, I don't know if he can handle it anymore. So it's either shit or get off the pot. So either keep your mouth shut or basically you're a liability. And that's what I think a lot of policing is now in this day and age. I think that's what's happening a lot. Guys just go home and pack it. They just pack it down. And then it comes out either in domestic violences, it comes out into alcoholism, it comes out into, you know, doing drugs or something like that, or working your ass off and losing your marriage or anything like that. And then that just tanks down that way. There needs to be something that needs to change in this environment, that it's okay to be like, hey, I'm not feeling good after this call, or something's not right. And I know we're trying to make strides to do it, but at the same time, every time we take two steps forward, it's three steps back. I mean, we're trying our best in the private sector here, but you know, the guys upstairs that wear the brass, that's like their call anyway. They say they want to help, but it doesn't really, when it like boils down to it, it's all about numbers, games, staffing issues, and budgets. And that's all they care about.
I assume that you've experienced some bad things with some administration just based on the taste in your mouth. That's fine. I do want to say in defense of some good administrators right out there. We know that.
There are some great PDs and administrators to work for. And I'm not saying Ventnor is one of those PDs that aren't. I'm not saying that in specifically to them. I'm just saying that there are times that, and there are PDs that I've worked for in the past, that it's just staffing issues. I don't give a shit. 17-hour, 16-hour days, suck it the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You on your, you know, kid gets hit by a car, on to the next call. We need to fucking have traffic. You know what I mean? You got to have 20 tickets this month. Like, are you kidding me? This kid just got fucking ran over and his head was literally rolling down the road. Ah, your ticket quota is not up to it. Go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. So.
I get it, dude.
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Arena was in the house today.
Appreciate it.
Really cool, man. It was great. I'm glad you came in, took the ride in.
Yeah.
It was just for a better experience. And
I appreciate you having me.
To a lifetime of enjoying the rest of your life and relaxing.
Yeah.
Just on also working. 31, right? You got to get back to work.
31 years old. I'm definitely working. I'm not one of those people that can just kind of sit around. That's definitely not me.
Well, brother, appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.